This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, we have a conversation with Clarence Webb, who's a Northwest Indiana realtor with a company in Crown Point, and he'll give us his year-end view of the local home sales as well as a look to 2018. We'll also bring back NIPSCO spokesperson Denise Rodriguez talking about the features that the utility has for the low-income heating assistance program and some other payment programs to help residents who are customers of NIPSCO be able to keep their heat on and pay their bills this winter. We'll also bring you a conversation, too, we had about the big expansion plan at Fair Oaks Farms that you'll be able to take advantage of. And we'll find out more from Keith Kirkpatrick and his guest on Lakeshore Focus. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Northwest Indiana is getting started for 2018 as far as home sales is concerned. In fact, better for sales, it's the supply that we seem to worry about the most these days. The local Association of Realtors has already kind of borne that out. But let's take a look at one of the agencies in particular and see how they're dealing with the situation. Clarence Webb is a real estate agent, a realtor. He is also the regional director of Prime Real Estate. It's based in Crown Point, and he is with us on Regionally Speaking today. Clarence, welcome.
Hey, nice to meet you. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Well, tell us a little bit here first about how 2017 has turned out. As a general term, how the agency's done, as well as how you think the realtors in Northwest Indiana have done for this past year.
We call this year a character-building year. So although we started off with some low inventory starting off, we quickly had to adjust to what was happening. But I think all the realtors at all the different companies fared very well with the way they switched up everything from moving to new construction to being a lot more careful with the way that they're choosing their listings and choosing their buyers. It was a very good year for all of us overall.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Now, as we focus into 2018, let's hit up on some high points here, or talking points, however you want to look at it, I suppose.
Sure.
That way, too, here. Let's take a look first here about how the market seemed to be doing with people coming over from Illinois wanting to live in Indiana for I guess whatever the reasons that your folks have mentioned have found out in people wanting to buy homes in Indiana as opposed to staying in Illinois. What seems to be first the general opinion of these folks who have decided to buy in Indiana?
Absolutely. I think that is definitely going to be a big thing that continues in 2018, everyone migrating from Illinois to Indiana. It's probably just the best thing. I mean, if you're commuting to downtown, you're driving 30, 45 minutes, you could do the exact same thing on this side of the border and stay near the lake and have a lot more land and yard for the money that you're paying for your prices.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just going to definitely continue as we move into 2018.
Have you found that that's been the case here, and maybe even as longer as this past year, maybe in the last few years? I know that that overall that home sales have done really well. There's just a kind of a slump here in sort of the middle of the century, so to speak, here, at least
Sure.
This particular decade, maybe. So there's been a little bit of slump, but it has seemed to have bounced back here. Has it been the case that we're finding more folks that have chosen Northwest Indiana to live?
Yes, more folks are definitely coming this way. I think they're being just a lot more careful with the homes that they're choosing, so I wouldn't necessarily call it a slump per se. They're being very particular with what type of home that they want. So they're choosing the type of lifestyle that they want and how they're going to raise their families, not necessarily the type of home, but where the home is and what they can accomplish for their families in the surrounding areas around that home. So I think as we focus on that type of purchasing for your lifestyle, I think that's what people are moving toward.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a related note here, we know that obviously people now, if they're buying a home in Northwest Indiana, they're making the commute on the highways
mm-hmm.
to get into the city to work in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the South Shore Line has some very big plans for expanding the service, improving the service all along the route. Do you think that once these improvements are made that we're going to find more homes being purchased in Northwest Indiana because people can hop on the South Shore either from South Lake County that far out or from the points to the east here and catch the train into Chicago rather than have to drive?
Absolutely. I think that's going to be the focus for everything citywide. Focus on what the actual consumer wants. So the South Shore Line and the expansion of that is definitely going to be a key point to getting people to working in Chicago and living out here in Northwest Indiana. As far as even Michigan City out this area, I mean, they're expanding the rail line all the way out there so people can literally drive in or commute in a 45-minute drive just to get to work. It's going to be awesome.
Inventory of homes for sale seems to be at the low point right now. I know that that's one of the things that Peter Novak with the Greater Northwest Indiana Association of Realtors has mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like the little bug in the room, I guess, that everybody's trying to swat at and deal with. And here, how do you see the situation with the availability of homes out there to be able to sell?
Sure. I think they're going to continue to decline. I think that sellers, though, are being a lot more careful with the way that they're listing their homes. So I think the quality of the listings that are out there are going up, whereas the overall inventory is going down. And I think that works very well for buyers that are coming to this area because they're actually picking up homes that have been taken care of and that sellers are actually putting a lot more time and effort into before they list the homes. So although inventory is still declining over the last few years, I think the quality of the homes that are going to be out there are going to be extraordinary, as well as the median price range of the homes that are coming up gradually over the years.
Mm-hmm. Now, going along with what's available out there in homes to be able to sell as well as to buy, we have the efforts to try to bring new houses into the mix. I know that the contractors have been doing their best here. They've had to deal with the economy and along the way here, too. Do you see that things are going to change well enough for them that they'll start building new homes?
Absolutely. I think it just makes perfect sense. So someone who can't find the perfect home that they're looking for, it only makes sense to dabble into the new construction market and to try to find a home that's going to be exactly what they want. They can build exactly what they want, where they want, to the specs that they want. So I think, again, catering to the consumer and exactly what they need out there, because the inventory is low, new construction is just going to continue booming the way it did in 2017, carrying over into 2018.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Clarence Webb, who's a realtor, and he's also regional director at Prime Real Estate based in Crown Point. Do you and your colleagues, especially people coming into the company, so to speak, pick up any special training and learning about dealing with new construction so that you're ready for it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a different type of market and a different type of sales process that the agent has to be aware of when directing their buyer when they're coming over. So although it's not the typical home price sale or the home transaction, when you create very good relationships with the builders and the communities out there that are starting to develop, you can definitely be of service to not only the builder but the client who's going to be purchasing as well.
Okay. One of the other points, too, I know that folks who are interested in buying a home, regardless of the size of the house, is to be able to find a place that is ready to move right in. And a lot of that has to do with the things that need to be done, the amenities that have to be made. What is your take on this, and how are the clients asking for more, so to speak? They want these houses ready to buy, and they're looking for the types of homes that are ready to move right into.
Sure. This has impressed me the most with the sellers and the way that they have adapted. So they understand that inventory is low, and there's not much to choose from. So it's key that to make sure that whatever they're putting on the market stands out very well over everything else that's out there. So they are putting a little bit more effort into their homes. They are upgrading their appliances and putting that extra coat of paint on everything before they actually list it. Because all the buyers that are coming on the market now are extremely serious, so they want to make sure that the first impression that they see is going to be excellent. And so the sellers have really done a good job of making sure that the homes that they put on the market are move-in ready, so people don't have to do any type of investing when they actually pick up the home for the first time.
Now, how do you think that things are going to be here? I know that the winter months are certainly slow as far as buying homes, although I guess there are some homes sold during the winter months, but you kind of gear things up for spring when the weather gets better and people are out there not only offering their homes for sale but out there looking for new places. How do you folks predict spring of 2018 is going to be?
Absolutely. Winter's probably my best time moving into spring. Anybody purchasing right now, they are absolutely serious if they're going to be out here in this type of weather. But moving into spring, we think that 2018 is going to be just as crazy as it was in 2017. So the first few months of the year, especially February leading into March, April, they're just going to be completely crazy. So those that take advantage of getting the homes on the market during these months are going to see the best gains and the best type of activity for people that are going to be purchasing their homes in 2018.
And we've talked here in general terms about how the market's going to be in Northwest Indiana. You have a chance to not only to talk with your colleagues there at Prime Real Estate and probably other real estate agencies as well, too. Are you all pretty much of the same opinion?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. So last year kind of took us by storm. We didn't really know what was going on. Things were just crazy, and things were selling off the shelves in 1 or 2 days. We had homes being accepting purchase agreements before we could even get signs in the yard. So with the continuing trend of the low inventory and the way that buyers are still looking to move to this particular area because of all the things that it offers, yes, we think 2018 is probably going to be even crazier than it was last year. So the companies that have positioned themselves in the proper way to take advantage of this are going to fare very well.
Now, in working with the people that are interested in buying homes or selling homes, you've, of course, got the financial angle to deal with, too. That's not totally in your area there, too, but how do you see the effects we're going to see with the tax law changes that have taken effect going into 2018 as far as making it homes available to sell or for people to buy homes?
Sure, sure. Taxes is definitely a buzzword this time of year, especially with the migration of what's happening between the different states coming to different areas, especially Northwest Indiana. No, we think that's going to continue. So as long as Northwest Indiana and these areas do what they're supposed to do to keep the taxes the way that they are, and not just that, making sure that we have the other amenities in the area that people are looking for their lifestyle, it's going to be perfect.
The best of luck as we go into 2018.
Absolutely, Mr. Nolte. Thank you so much.
We're talking with Clarence Webb, who is a realtor, and he's also regional director for Prime Real Estate, which is based in Crown Point. Clarence, thank you very much for being with us to talk about this. Wish you and everybody who's out there selling homes and the folks who are buying homes as well, too, for clients, the best of luck as we go into 2018. And this time of year, when it's extra cold, extra snowy, extra icy, there's some folks who can't keep up with the bills that they're paying for their heating. The low-income heat assistance program and other payment programs are available through NIPSCO to help customers who may need the help in paying their heating bills this year. And we talked recently with a NIPSCO spokesperson, Denise Rodriguez, about it.
NIPSCO actually has a few energy assistance programs to help with utility bills and assistance. So we have from state and federal assistance programs to we also partner with community action agencies, township trustees, and also in-house we have payment agreements. So we just basically ask anybody, you know, if you're struggling, you know, if you think you can't make ends meet, just please give us a call at 1-800-4-NIPSCO, and, you know, our customer service agents will take a look at your bill, ask you a few questions, and just basically help you and connect you with the best possible option for you and in your situation.
Mm-hmm. The program, I know, is based a lot on what the income is for a family, depending on how the size of the family is. Tell us how the breakout is here, the important things that people need to know so they know whether they actually qualify.
Depending on your family size, all of that information is located on our website. Mm-hmm. It's on NIPSCO.com/payment assistance. There's quite a few numbers in here. Instead of me rattling them off, I think it would just be easier for people to either visit our website or, like I said, just give our customer service agents a call, because they could easily, you know, just ask you those simple questions and just lead you directly to that information.
I guess,
but for state and federal funding, that assistance is limited. So first, it comes on a first-come, first-served basis.
Right. That's the important thing that I guess depends on what kind of help that you're looking for, whether you're looking for help from NIPSCO in trying to deal with your bills and that sort of thing, or whether you're looking for some type of grant. And that's where the community action agencies come into play too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. When you take a look at the things you need to know for being able to deal with paying your bills, NIPSCO, as you mentioned, NIPSCO has a number of other assistance programs besides the official one that is in effect for this time of year with the heating costs and all. Tell us a little bit some of the other programs that NIPSCO has that work in conjunction or alongside this particular program.
With the LIHEAP program, there's also the NIPSCO CARE program. So if you are approved for LIHEAP, you are basically automatically enrolled in our NIPSCO CARE program, which also provides another reduction in percentage of your bill. And I think that ranges between 11 and 26%. Mm-hmm. It just depends on, you know, the criteria that helped with your LIHEAP, with that information that you had provided with us. Along with that, there's also the NIPSCO Hardship Program, and that's energy assistance for customers who fall between 151% and 200% of the federal poverty level. Those numbers are also on our website at NIPSCO.com/payment assistance. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, we also work with township trustees and community action agencies to kind of lead you in the right direction. Maybe there's another grant that you could get, like, in your community, and as I mentioned, a payment agreement. So basically what the payment agreement does, it allows you to make an initial payment within 4 days of the agreement, and then you spread the remaining unpaid balance over a couple of months. Any of those programs, you know, if you're interested in or to see if you qualify, we strongly encourage anybody to to give us a call.
It's really important, in particular, if you have a situation where you're unable to be able to pay your electric or your natural gas heating bill, and you're up against disconnection, you have to do something pretty quickly, don't you? And you have to make sure that the folks at NIPSCO know about the problem.
Yes, just like any other thing, you know, we want to make sure that you're safe. We want to make sure that you're warm and you have electricity and you have everything you need this winter. Because, you know, as you know, we live in the Midwest, so one day it can be 20 degrees and the next it can be 65.
That's right.
So we just want to make sure that everyone's safe and warm. And, even if you're just a little bit worried, if you're unsure, just please give us a call, because the sooner you call us, the easier it is for us to help and the more room we have to work with you and just lead you in the right direction.
And we know the National Weather Service is even hedging its bets on how this kind of winter we're going to have this year. It's just hard to tell right now. So once again, what's the way that people can get hold of NIPSCO to find out more about these programs and to get some help if they need it right away?
So you can visit us on our website at nipsco.com/payment assistance. All of the assistance options are on our website along with the information needed for each one if you just kind of want to do a quick research. Or the easiest way to, you know, just see if you qualify and just get, you know, information for you would be to call our customer service agents at 1-800-4-NIPSCO.
That's Denise Rodriguez, who's a spokesperson for NIPSCO. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Work will begin in earnest this spring for a major addition at Fair Oaks Farms, a new hotel. We talked with Michael McCall, who is Fair Oaks Farms' chief strategy officer, about the planning behind a place for visitors to stay.
We're following the market. The more we add attractions and things to do at Fair Oaks Farms, the longer the potential length of stay is for our guests, because there's just more to do. You know, many of them said, you know, we'd love to be able to stay overnight, you know, right here and take it in another day or take it in a full day and then move on to, you know, elsewhere in our travels. And then the second piece of it is listening to the market of meeting events. We have a lot of facilities at Fair Oaks Farms. A lot of we have, of course, the farmhouse, restaurant, pub and conference center has a conference center. But then we have a whole array of other facilities around the campus for meetings from as small as, you know, 5 or 6 people to, you know, to 30 people. And then the farmhouse can have hundreds. So that was another thing is we have these facilities, but it would be great. People told us it'd be great to have a place to stay. So we feel like we're just sort of, you know, beginning to round out the experience and the hospitality with this new Marriott Fairfield Inn and Suites.
Now, what interested you folks in attracting Marriott among all the other companies that offer the similar types of lodging?
We did, you know, research the industry and everything. Marriott is the biggest and the best. It's really the strongest reservation system, and you just can't go wrong. And Marriott, I can't say enough about how good it has been to work with them, because they understood the opportunity to, while living up to all their standards, to make this a very special place that, you know, a bespoke design specifically for Fair Oaks Farms, so that it not only fits in, but it actually extends the identity of Fair Oaks Farms. Mm-hmm. And they've been really terrific to work with.
If you will describe what the architects working for the company have come up with on how the new hotel is going to look when it's finished.
I'd love to do that. It's you know, in a sense, it's a giant red barn, and it's been designed to fit in very well with the farmhouse, restaurant, pub, and conference center, which it'll be connected to. Mm-hmm. So that's a very key thing, is that it'll be physically connected 100 feet away in an enclosed, air-conditioned, heated connection with a lot of windows going by the oaks of Fair Oaks. There's a beautiful tree right there. It is this giant barn and a milking parlor scaled building. The milking parlors are generally one-story structures attached to, you know, the barns with the cattle and the hay barn loft above. Well, we have a smaller building that is integral to the whole hotel. That is our health club and swimming pool. So It really has the model of a classic, if a bit giant dairy barn.
Now, I know that this is a project, of course, from a national company when you're talking about Marriott, but you have a lot of Northwest Indiana players that are involved in this at almost every aspect of the planning as well as the construction. Go down the list and tell us about all the companies and businesses that are going to be involved to help make this actually become reality for Fair Oaks Farms.
We sure do have a lot of help from Northwest Indiana. It starts out with Good Hospitality Services. They own and/or manage 25 plus hotels, so they know this industry extremely well, and they have guided us through the process of working with Marriott and in the design, and they will actually manage the hotel. We have Core Construction out of Schererville. It's a national company, but this is their a very strong office right here, just 20 miles away from the farm. Mm-hmm. And we have DBG Civil Engineering taking care of the stormwater management and all those things and making that look beautiful as well as functional. We've got the Hamster Group is one of the largest subcontractors to Core, and they've built many things at the farm already and are very strong in this area. So we've got a great complement of regional talent coming to bear for us, and we greatly appreciate that.
When you all got together to do the initial planning before the big announcement of the creation of this this great lodging facility that's going to be built along part of the Fair Oaks Farms campus, what ideas did they have? What kind of comments did they have that they wanted to make this, and it certainly is going to turn out that way based on the designs that we've seen so far, to make this a truly unique experience along the same lines as what the entire Fair Oaks Farms complex has really been over the years, hasn't it?
Well, thank you for saying that. All of us wanted to make this, a very special hotel that has the reputation and quality of a Marriott, but is completely unique. And it faces Interstate 65, and you will be able to. We have two silos attached like a barn would. We have these two large silos. And those silos there's two silos and four floors in the hotel. So we have eight opportunities to have some very unique rooms, and those eight silo suites will be very special. We have four of them. We call them family and friends. They'll have bunk beds. We have two of them that will be have a one room conference center, meaning a place for four, five, six people to meet for a meeting right in the room, added on to a conventional room with all the AV support and everything. And then we have something really special, which we have we call it the bridal boudoir, which is a bridal suite so that the bride and the maid of honor and her mom and all of her girlfriends can get ready for a great wedding event that day. So it's a very unique hotel, and the team has, everybody's contributed to the ideas of how to make that unique.
Now, Michael, we have the big announcement of the plans for this this great facility to be built. What's the timetable? When are we likely to like to reserve a room and actually enjoy this this great hotel? It's a few years down the road, but not that far away, I understand.
Yeah, it's about a year and a half. So we will be open for business, we believe, in February of 2019. So we've got about a year and a half. The construction, we had our groundbreaking last Thursday, of course, but the construction's actually started about a month before that. They're busy pouring foundations right today. And so far, things are going very well. And if we can get it open sooner than February, we will. But right now, that's what we're saying, February 2019.
That's Michael McCall, who is the Chief Strategy Officer for Fair Oaks Farms, in a recent conversation we've had with him. This is Regionally Speaking. It's time once again for another Lakeshore Focus conversation with Keith Kirkpatrick from Lakeshore PBS.
Our emphasis this month is on women in roles of leadership. Today we focus on the world of business. What is it like for a woman who aspires to success and balances her many other roles? Let's find out by beginning our conversation with Teresa Mudd, who is a vice president with First Merchants Bank, and Deb Pressel, who is owner of Pressel CPA. Welcome, ladies. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks for having us.
So everybody's probably going, why did you pick these two? And I guess I have to admit, I picked you two because I think that you guys are doing incredible things in the community. So, and are really, I see, as pretty successful in your careers with what you're doing. So is it tough being in business today as a woman?
I think it's being in business today as a woman is a huge opportunity. I think women have more opportunities in business. Being in business for yourself gives you flexibility that you need to be your own boss, and you can provide for your family at the same time.
I agree, and I think that a lot of corporate organizations are realizing the same thing and allowing for that flexibility in careers as well. So while it is still challenging, you know, sometimes to get that leg up, I think that there's more opportunity than there ever has been.
Flexibility is important for a woman. Is it important for just a woman or for everybody today in the workforce?
I think flexibility is important for a woman, and it depends upon your relationship with your husband or if you are, a single mom. But flexibility is pretty important because if you do have kids, flexibility is important when you have a house that you're managing also and kids that you're managing. I think that's the most important time period when you need that flexibility. And there's a different time in everyone's life. And as your family changes and as you change through different phases, that flexibility changes. When they're babies, there's, you know, the sickness of the babies that are sick type of flexibility that you need. Versus when you have grade school age kids, there's the after school activities type of flexibility that you need in business. And like I said, I think the flexibility for as a woman is the same for as a man, and usually a couple needs to work that out together. And I see that happening so much now in both a man's career and a woman's career.
So that flexibility is important, and you both are talking about, you're talking about kids. You both have kids, right? So you're both managing that at the same time you have these careers, right? And it's obvious you have a career, Teresa. You have a kid, right? Because you're probably wearing something that one of your kids gave you, yes?
Yes, my son made this bracelet for me at camp yesterday, and I was getting ready to leave the house today, and he said, "Mommy, you can't leave without my bracelet." So he made me put it on, and he said, "I'm sorry it's all boy colors, but I hope you like it." So I wore it today because he really wanted me to wear it.
You know, I took a big risk because Teresa could have made that herself.
Right.
And I would have said, "Oh, your kid made that." No, I made this myself. Oh, that would have been really embarrassing. But so how old are your kids?
My daughter's 6, and okay. My son is 3.
And yours?
3 teenage daughters and a 10-year-old.
Holy cow. So you guys got your hands full. You definitely have more of your hands full. And not only are you guys raising families and having kids, you guys are both really involved in the community and doing a lot of stuff, too. Teresa, you're in, like, all kinds of stuff, right?
I am, yes.
Tell me a couple of the things that you're engaged in.
I am on the board for the Urban League. I'm involved with Habitat as well. I'm on the committee for the Professional Women's Conference for Lakeshore Public Media.
Oh, I didn't even know that, so I want to make sure that that's a disclosure here. So.
I am, and that's a lot of fun. I also am starting to coach my daughter's soccer team as an assistant coach this year. And
that's just what you're doing now, because I know you've done a ton of stuff in the past with all kinds of other organizations. You just kind of move to the next ones, right?
Yes.
And Deb, you're involved with a bunch of stuff too, right?
I do a bunch of stuff, yes. A
couple of things that you're involved with?
So a lot of things that I'm involved with is related to the school. I'm in volunteering at the school, and also our church is where I spend a lot of time. I do work with the Valparaiso Women's Association, and I've done several speaking engagements where people have asked for me to speak on personal finance.
I just want everybody to understand, you guys have full-time jobs. They're not just full-time jobs, but they're like really responsible jobs at a fairly high level, being an owner of a company and vice president of the bank. But you've got families, and you've got all these other activities you're involved in. How do you do this? Everybody's got to be out there going, how do they pull that off?
If I were to say it was easy, I'd be lying. It's definitely a balancing act. And as I join other things, or as the kids get involved in other organizations, it is really trying to figure out what makes the most sense, where do you spend the time, how do you get dinner that night, right? Are you going to make it, or are you going to have to go out? And it really is just, it's a juggling act. And I always want to be, number one for me is to be the best mom that I can be. So making sure that that's my priority, as well as...
Is it more important than your job?
I think family is the most important thing, and I work to provide for my family, but also have the sense of self-success and self-motivation. So they're both very important, but, you know, they always say, do you want your gravestone to say she was a great worker, or loving, giving mother, or both? And I think being passionate about the community, showing the kids that it's important to volunteer and give to others and do that thing, or do things like that, is extremely important. So it all kind of goes together in being a good mom, being a businesswoman, and being able to help the community as well.
So your tombstone is probably going to say the caring, loving mother first, awesome employee, and then she did all this stuff in the community, right?
Right.
So it's all there. How do you balance this out, Deb?
You know, I think I always take a look at what's going to be most important to me during the day. You know, you juggle a lot of hats, and sometimes it's, you know, what's important to me that day. You know, what do I have to get done that day? And I think I love that I work because it really makes my kids independent also. And they have to realize that my time is valuable, so that they could do more things on their own then too, you know, throughout the day. And I really think it's developed my kids into better human beings, better teenagers, responsible teenagers that can really solve some problems for themselves too.
It's really interesting. You reminded me when I was a kid, my dad was hurt and went back to college, and my mom bought a business and was running this business, and she was like, I'm so sorry I did that while you kids were little. I'm like, oh my gosh, you made us so independent. You know, mm-hmm. We had to learn to do everything. Plus, we worked in the business all the time. We were slave labor, I think, or cheap labor, or something like that.
Yep.
So why did you both decide to go into business? I mean, you chose that field as opposed to teaching or nonprofits or healthcare, anything else. Why did you pick business?
I've always been a very motivated individual, and I always look for opportunities and what. Where can I be the most successful, or where can I make the biggest impact? And honestly, if you would have asked me 15 years ago where I would be today, it wouldn't be as a vice president of a bank. But I'm so happy I took the path that I did, because I've learned so much along the way.
What did you think you'd be?
I thought I was going to be a criminal attorney. When I was a junior and senior in high school, I had all intentions of going to law school. I was accepted into law school after a couple of years of college, and just decided that that's not the route that I wanted to take. So I ended up changing my major and going into human resources and business management, and I haven't looked back since. It's been a great ride for me. I've learned so much. I've met so many key people, and I know the opportunities are endless. You know, being in business doesn't really restrict you to one field. But when you find that field that you're passionate about and that supports you and your growth and development, it's nice to be able to grow as an individual, not just as a woman, but, you know, you're a part of that organization and a part of that internal growth plan. And there's so many opportunities there.
So for those of us who use the banks, we're glad that those two don't correlate, banking and criminal activity. So,
right, right. Oh, me too, believe me.
We're just really hoping it stays that way for sure. Why did you pick to go into the business direction?
Yeah, I think I've always enjoyed working with people. And I really enjoy math as far as accounting goes, and understanding the business, the economic side of things. And that drove me, and it's such a good fit for what I do and for the lifestyle that we're living.
You know, maybe a better question for you, being mm-hmm. a CPA, being mm-hmm. a public accountant, is why'd you decide to start your own business as opposed to, again, as a mom?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be a little easier if you just, like, work for somebody?
Right,
and
right. Yeah, so I did work for somebody, for the first 7 years of my career right out of school. I worked for a fairly large firm and worked a lot of hours, got a great base for learning the knowledge that I needed. And I went out on my own because there was I was working 75 to 80 hours a week at times, traveling a lot, and that wasn't conducive to starting a family. And when I did start my family, at first I thought I was going to retire altogether. But I had enough people that my business started small and has grown with my kids into a decent-sized business now, which is a full-time business for me. And just the flexibility that that has allowed me over the years. I've been in business for myself for 16 years now.
So what's the downside of being in business today as a woman, particularly as it comes to dealing with men?
Sure.
And or even other women, because I know women can be just sometimes just about as challenging, right? So what's the downside or the tough side of that today?
I think there are definitely times when dealing with other men, men and women in business, probably the hardest thing in dealing with other men and women, I'm not really sure. I haven't had, you know, that is not the struggle that I have.
Okay.
That is not the struggle that I have in business.
So you never feel like they don't take you serious because you're a woman?
No, I don't have that struggle at all. I have never had anyone disrespect me.
It's really interesting because older women will talk about that quite
a
bit. I mean, do you experience that?
I have. Okay. Not so much anymore, but in my earlier days in management, I experienced it both through employees that were sometimes a little bit older than me, maybe had a little bit more experience in the field, but not necessarily management experience. You know, I had some pushback there. And then even still to this day in the banking world, there's a little bit of a stigma or a stereotype associated with the good bankers or the successful bankers. So more so when I was managing an office, people would come in and mostly older men.
Want to know where the manager's at?
Yes. Do you really know what you're talking about? How can you possibly know?
Do you think that's changed? So do you hear some of the people you supervise, the women who are running or managing some of the branches, do you hear them say they still face that?
They do. It just doesn't happen as often anymore as it used to. And I don't know if people have just accepted the transition at this point because they're good, right? These managers are good. They know what they're doing. And so once you actually sit down and have a conversation with them and give them a chance, I think that people realize, okay, maybe they do know what they're talking about.
Yeah. And I think that's the same with me. When people are calling me with questions and stuff, I mean, they have to have developed a trust with me, and they're looking for me for answers. And I have not had anyone question, you know, my education. And
do you hear that from other people, particularly this concept? Everybody wants to talk about the glass ceiling, you know. And I'm beginning to wonder, is the glass getting thinner and thinner? Is it cracked? I mean, do you still hear that people are trying to move up and they can't go further because the guys are running the jobs? You're shaking your head yes. So
I just in my experience, and again, this is outside of my business because I work with a lot of women in business. You know, I do see that to me, women get paid less than men do.
You see all those.
I see that commonly throughout the region here. I mean, I think that's a common problem throughout the country. That women will be paid less than men for a similar type job. Women that tend to be in business for themselves tend to just charge less than men do for the same type of work. So I see it on both sides. Not only are they compensated less, but women that they tend to not value themselves as much when they are putting themselves up for business, too.
This is interesting. If you think about this, women are still paid less, and you hear this all the time, but women are making a lot of these decisions now about hiring people.
Right.
So are the women still part of the problem, too? They're perpetuating the system, do you think? We're going to do the HR thing, so.
Right. I think in some cases it's adapting, right? So this has already been, it's already been set. The value's already been placed there. I mean, obviously it's not in the HR manual. Women get paid this, men get paid this. But if you go on historical pay, and that's typically how places are going to hire and pay, and the woman was paid less than the man, then they're going to come in being paid less. And so I think it's just a cycle that needs to be broken. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is a reality, and it's a reality across the country. It's not just here in Northwest Indiana.
So do you think those opportunities are getting better? Because that was your call word at the beginning, opportunity, opportunity, opportunity. Are there better opportunities now? I mean, are they even going to get better for women in business?
I do. Personally, I see it just increasing and getting better. You know, it's definitely not where it's not to the potential that it could be. If you look around at executives and CEOs, there are some women, but it's definitely overpowered by, and I don't have the statistic, but by male, right? Mm-hmm. So really thinking about where we're going and how far we've come, I think gives you hope that the future is only going to get better. So I can only hope that my six-year-old daughter is going to have even more opportunity than I do today, because she looks up to me. She looks at the things that I do. She looks at other women in the business world and knows that she wants to become something successful, which I couldn't be more proud of something like that, you know, for my six-year-old. So I think it's great.
Is this reality, or is this just kind of your hopefulness? Because I know you. You're always the glass is three quarters full, maybe if not almost to the top. So you think all the other women experience that too? Like, oh, there's really this opportunity. Everything's getting better?
So from what I see women that are starting their own businesses, that have these great ideas of things that they are going to do on their own. I love helping a woman start their own business, and they're passionate about it, and it's all them, and they're all in. And they're successful. I see women being successful at that. So I think that opportunity for this next generation to go out there and find something that they get some experience and something that they really love to do, and then just go all in to building their own businesses, I see a lot of women going that route.
I tend to agree with both of you. I think that there is more opportunity, and I think it's that hope that will drive part of that too for women. You talked about how important it was to role model for your daughter. And how important is that for you to role model for not only your kids, but just other girls, young girls, for them to see you? And what do you do to make that happen?
That is so important. So I do a lot of financial literacy, a lot of community outreach, that type of thing. So I like to, and in any community, that one-on-one time or that attention from somebody other than your teacher or your parents or your family goes a long way. So anybody that I can mentor or share some knowledge with that wants to sit down and have a one-on-one conversation, I'm always open to that, because I want them to know there is hope. You know, there are going to be, like you said, you know, there's going to be forces that say you can't do it, you can't do it, you can't do it. But to know that you always can. And one of my mottos has always been focus on what you can do, not what you can't. And that's in any aspect of life. That's whether you can help a customer do something, focus on the positive. Whether you can be the captain of the cheerleading team or the captain of the soccer team or whatever it is, you can do it if you put your mind to it. And so that kind of rhymed.
I like that. It's a slogan. Yeah. Where'd you pick that up? So I know you have at least one daughter. How many daughters do you have?
I have four daughters.
All? Wow. So you
so
are...
I have four girls that I am, yes, you know, trying to prepare for careers someday and looking at career. We do. We talk about careers and possibilities and financial management often at our house, being an accountant. And they always kind of, you know, chuckle about that. But it is
definitely... It would be tough if you were a CPA and your daughters grew up to be kind of financially illiterate, right?
Right, exactly, exactly.
If one won't listen to you, you can send them over to Teresa, though.
There you go.
Right?
We can work together.
They tend to listen, yeah. But it is something that you do think about as you're, you know, raising daughters. What is that going to look like for them? And again, I look at it as, what is it going to look like for them as they are raising their own families? Because I think that is the challenge. What career can they be in and do a good job at raising a family?
We don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to ask this question. Just do you see some women who just are in business and kind of say, I can't deal with this. I just really would rather work in the nonprofit world or teach or do something else because I think it's going to be easier or different. Do you see that? Or is that kind of gone away?
I don't see a lot of that anymore, to be honest with you. I think anybody who's trying to figure out what their career is going to be will go through that. I think you've even seen the other side of it, where a teacher has said, this isn't for me.
You know,
I'd rather be in the business world.
Right.
So I think any career that you're in, male or female, you know, it leaves for that room for uncertainty or where am I going to make the best use of my time and to what organization can I be the most valuable?
Okay. We only got a couple minutes left, so I really don't want to depart from this conversation without each of you kind of having that opportunity to say, here's my advice to young women today, you know, to even to all women today. Mm-hmm. What's your advice to other women today?
I think find your passion. Find your passion and follow that dream. No matter if it looks like you're not going to make a lot of money at it, don't necessarily just go to where there's money, because if you're passionate about something, you will figure out how to make money doing that.
Good advice. Teresa.
They always say you'll never work another day in your life if you love what you're doing. So to piggyback off of what Deb said, I think that finding what you love, right? So finding something that you can see yourself doing the rest of your life, and there are going to be things that come up that are obstacles for you. Don't take that as a knockdown. Look at it as an opportunity to move forward. And as long as you keep your eye on what you want to do, you can really do or be anything that you want to be.
Well, you guys obviously role modeled really well what you are preaching, because you are good examples of people who are passionate about what you do and you love what you do. So I really appreciate you both being on the show and sharing these thoughts, and I hope some of our younger audience, some of the women out there, will listen to this and go, that was really good advice, because it was. Thank you both for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Lakeshore Focus airs on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and is rebroadcast Sundays at 9:30 a.m. on Lakeshore PBS. 3 out of every 4 Indiana jails are overcrowded, according to the Indiana Criminal Justice Institute. The majority of sheriffs say that their inmate populations increased significantly since the passage of a criminal code that was revised nearly 4 years ago. And as Indiana Public Broadcasting Charlotte Tuggle tells us, some are trying to find local solutions before they're hit with a lawsuit.
As you can see, bunks are getting set up.
Sheriff Steve Rogers is surveying the construction inside Howard County's old jail in Kokomo. Several metal bunk beds line the dusty room. Outside, construction workers are building a security desk. The space hasn't been used in years. After it became overcrowded, a lawsuit was brought against the county and the space abandoned. The newer, larger jail is just blocks down the street and getting more crowded every day. The bunks in the old building are all empty now, but won't be by the first of the year.
They're working at their jobs. They're paying their own way, and the community isn't having to pay for their room and board, so to speak, at the jail. I think that's just a win for everybody.
It's soon to be a work release center, capable of housing 80 inmates eligible to live there instead of the jail. The center will also offer mental health and addiction services. Rogers hopes that'll help the current population problem, but the decision to send inmates there is ultimately up to the courts.
You know, I think that's very hard to predict. We can make estimations. We're hoping that right off the bat we get some people out of the jail, but it's probably going to be an evolving process.
Rogers says his jail has taken on about 60 more inmates on average since the passage of House Bill 1006 in 2014. The bill's author, Representative Greg Stirwald, says the criminal code was revamped to assure more certainty in sentencing. That includes granting courts the ability to send lower-level felons to community corrections programs. The idea, Stirwald says, is someone charged with, for example, drug possession, could be sent to a county jail instead of state prison.
The goal was to move nonviolent offenders who needed mental health and addiction services to community corrections, not simply take them out of DOC and put them in jail.
He says many of the bill's major points have been successful, such as the addiction recovery program and ensuring different law enforcement groups regularly convene. But he admits it's also increased some jail populations.
We're in the process right now through the Sheriff's Association of gathering all the data from 2010 to present, so we can take a look at all aspects of the effect of 1006.
That data reveals 10% of all county jail beds are filled with those felony diversion cases. According to an Indiana Criminal Justice Institute poll, nearly three-quarters of sheriffs say both their average jail population and how long inmates stay has increased significantly since the bill's passage.
I had a previous sheriff tell me a number of years ago that, you know, we deal with the negative part of society, so you need to try and be a positive as much as you can.
That's Carroll County Sheriff Tobe Lesenby. He's among those looking for local options to grapple with rising populations. But that can be especially difficult for rural jails that didn't have much space in the first place. At Lesenby's facility, certain people have to be separated. That includes men and women, misdemeanor versus felony offenders, and those who have been sentenced versus those who haven't appeared in court. But that's a problem when the jail runs out of beds.
In some of our areas that sleep not exactly on the floor, but they sleep on what we call canoes. They're preformed plastic type mattresses, and they're on the floor because there's no bunk available.
If an inmate files a complaint, then a lawyer could turn it into a class action lawsuit with the potential to go to federal court. Then a judge could mandate the building of a new jail using local funding. So Lesenby says he's trying to stay ahead of the curve.
But what I remind the council and commissioners of is that we can't continue to kick the can down the road.
For years, his county has debated expanding the current jail or building a new one. Lesenby says the last time an estimate came in, the cost of each option was roughly the same. Now, like many other sheriffs, he's spending thousands of dollars a month shipping inmates to the few other county jails that have space for his prisoners. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Charlotte Tuggle.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow, it's Reporters Roundtable Thursday. And from the Times, we'll have State House reporter Dan Carton, business reporter Joseph Pete, Cale Wilk, who is the podcast producer at the Times of Northwest Indiana, will join us, as well as from the Post-Tribune, Carol Carlson. That's tomorrow on Regionally Speaking.